Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Stories to listen to when you drive. Volume 11, story number 1. This occurred to me some time ago, but it is still very vivid in my mind of what happened that night. My fiancé, our friend Ed, and I were out joyriding around one night. It was pretty late. It was probably close to midnight. We were starting to get bored, and my fiancé, James, spoke up and said, "Well, what do you guys want to do?" I couldn't think of anything, and quite frankly, I was getting a little tired, and I wanted to go home. Our friend Ed said, "Why don't we take her to that house off of Highway 36? I said, "What house?" And James said, "You'll see." So he started driving in that direction, and we came to this huge, run-down, two-story house. Immediately, I felt uneasy and nauseous. The house had no paint on it, the doors were gone, and the windows were all busted out. There was a falling-in barn on the far right of the house, near the backyard, and in the front yard there were a few trees, but one in particular was very big. In the backyard, from what I could see, there was just an old cellar. Also in the front yard, there was what looked to be like a falling-in well. I asked James what the story was on this house, and he said that back in the 1900s, there was a family that lived here, a husband, a wife, and their children. I can't remember how many children. I said, "Okay, so why did you guys bring me out here?" And he said that when they lived here, somehow mercury got into their well water and caused them all to go insane. The man killed all of his children with an axe, hung his wife in the front yard on that really big tree I mentioned earlier, and then shot himself in the front yard afterwards. Now, I do know that you can find this article in the newspaper in the library of my town, so I knew that there was some truth to it. I said, "Okay." I didn't really know what to expect at this point, and then our truck died. Well, that didn't really scare me because vehicles do that sometimes when they're set and idle for a few minutes. I was looking around and my eyes came to the side of the house near the backyard, and I swear to this, I saw a huge dog. I know it was a dog because I could see the glint reflecting light on its eyes when he would turn his head, and I could see his pink tongue moving in and out of the mouth as it panted. I could also see his rib cage as he was breathing. This dog was no ordinary dog. It was gigantic. I can't think of any breed of dog or animal that could be that big. I just stared and pointed. I was utterly speechless. The guys looked at each other and looked at me, and then the truck died again and wouldn't start. Then from the corner of my eye, I saw movement. The guys saw it too, as they turned their heads to look in the same direction I was looking in. There was someone walking through the house. And the weird part was that one minute this thing would be upstairs, where you could see it in the window, and the next minute it would be downstairs in the window. I was very frightened by this point. I started feeling as if I couldn't breathe. It was like a pressure on my chest. I looked around the yard and thought I saw someone walking around. The guy saw it too, but this was not a regular person. I didn't think for a moment. I couldn't comprehend that it was a full figure, and then the next moment you could almost see through him. James was trying to start the truck, and it finally did turn on. We pulled out of the driveway and started for home. They won't admit it, but they were just as scared as I was. When we got home, I started some bath water. I looked in the mirror and saw something on my chest that was a massive handprint. I called James in to look at it, and he said that he saw it too. I think that while we were at that house, something was pushing on my chest, and that's why I couldn't breathe. I did see other things that night, but I just don't know how to explain them. Story number 2. I've been retired for over a dozen years, and I worked for almost 40 years for the government. In other words, I'm not a young guy. And when you hear this story, you might think or wonder why it didn't give me a heart attack. Now, my job when I was working was to maintain microwave sites across the Four Corners region in the Southwest. So I traveled to these mountaintops where the sites are located, in the states of Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado. For the first 25 years of this work, I had worked alone. That was until they decided to give me some guy to work with. In other words, everybody had to work in a pair. Well, here's the story behind that. And I'm going to tell it since I'm retired. And if it hadn't been that there were other witnesses, I would have probably been retired earlier than what I did, just because I would have been considered nuts. I seriously doubt if anyone will believe this story, but here goes. Now, being a technician involved spending a lot of time getting in and out of sites and actually being there, because the roads were rough and steep and exposed. Winters were the worst time to go to these places, and they were usually on mountaintops. But I had to go there when things went down, no matter what the season was. I usually would go in a pickup truck, and until the roads got snowed under, then I'd pull a trailer with a snow cat on it, get as far as possible, then unload the cat and drive it up to the site. I saw some of the most beautiful sights imaginable going in like that. Entire forest covered in snow after a storm. A lot of things that you don't see at the lower altitudes. Well, anyway, sometime in January, and I was sent to a big peak in Utah. It was one of my sites, but I hardly ever went there. The equipment was pretty new and rarely needed work, which was fine by me, as I really didn't care to go up that road, which was pretty steep. The views were beautiful, though, and I always enjoyed looking out over the desert. I knew it had been snowing over there, and I called the road maintenance guys and confirmed that I wouldn't be getting far without the cat. So I loaded it up and headed out, getting to the nearest town by late afternoon, which was the norm, and a few of these sites are close to the headquarters. I got up early the next morning and was soon in the cat, going up that steep road to the top. I hadn't seen that much snow for a lot of years. It had really snowed a lot, and the road gave me fits, but I finally got to the site. These communication sites never used to be fenced, but now that there's so many people everywhere, they've decided to put high metal fences around them with locked gates. But at that time, there was no fence, and that was a good thing. The snow was deep, so I had a rough time getting in through the gates, just too much snow. Finally got up, pulled the cat up next to the building to figure things out and see how to get inside. Because of the snow, all these buildings housing the communication equipment have doors in their roofs as well as the sides. There was no way I was going to go in through the side door. I couldn't even find it. So I climbed up to the roof to see how much snow I was going to have to shovel off before I could get inside. Like I said, most of my work was getting in and out. Once I was there, I usually could reset or fix whatever wasn't working within a few hours at most. Well, I can tell you that what I saw sure wasn't what I expected to see. No shoveling necessary. The door was already open. These buildings are made of metal. Metal door that was there had literally been wrenched off its hinges and was lying on the roof, twisted from the force. It looked like a pretzel, and this was a very heavy door. I looked down the ladder into the building. There was some snow inside, and enough that I couldn't get in there to fix anything. It didn't look like anything had been damaged, and the snow was probably what had caused the equipment to go offline. I walked around a bit, trying to figure out what happened, and I had to find some logical explanation. The only thing I could think of was maybe some kind of tornado. These are very big peaks that get very swift winds, and one time there was one recorded at over 100 miles per hour. So what I suspected was some type of freak wind that somehow caught the door, even though it was firmly closed and locked, and actually pulled it off its hinges. But after looking around a bit, I realized there was nothing I could do by myself. I needed help getting all that snow out of the inside, and there was going to have to be a new door installed. It would take at least a couple of men several hours to clear the building before I could even see the equipment to work on it. So I decided to head back down the mountain and have to come back again. I got on the radio and called the headquarters, told my boss what happened. He agreed it would be a waste of time for me to try to do the work by myself, especially since the next storm would just bury everything again if there was no door in place. I would go home, get a crew, come back in a few days, along with a new door. I sat down on the edge of my snow-cat's treads to have a cup of hot coffee and eat some lunch before I headed back. It was cold, but beautiful, and the sky was very blue. The air was crisp, and you could see ice crystals floating around. I had a camera with me, and I took some photos of this beautiful country. After I finished, pulled out the camera, climbed back up on the roof, thinking this might be a good thing to do, document, just to show people what the wind can do. I took some photos and then climbed back into the cat, started up, and headed down the mountain. I wasn't more than 100 feet from the top when I saw that something had walked directly in my snow cat tracks. Something large, and it wasn't very long ago. I hadn't been up there more than an hour. I got out wondering what could be up there. Bears would be hibernating. Cougars didn't come up that high. I stood there, my jaw hanging open for some time, because those tracks were huge. It looked like someone had been walking on my tracks, something with bare feet, big bare feet. The only animal I could think of were birds. These footprints had a stride that was big, maybe 4 feet between the tracks, and that made me stop and think a lot. I had just seen a show on the Abominable Snowman, and I was thinking, had I found one here in Utah? I remembered my camera and took some photos of the tracks, and I even put a glove next to them just for scale. It looked like they were at least 16 inches long and about 10 inches wide. My snowcat was heavy and had packed down the snow pretty good, but these tracks sank down even deeper, a good 6 or 8 inches into the snowcat tracks. Whatever had made the tracks was heavy. The more I looked at it, the more spooked I got. The tracks were going downhill, the same direction I was going in. I got back into the cat and kept going, hoping I wouldn't run into whatever had made those tracks. At about 50 feet or less, the track veered off into the forest, heading straight up the road bank, where you could see it had slid backwards a bit as the bank was steep. Even at that point, it was a good 15 feet. I got off that mountain as fast as I could, and it wasn't until later when I told my wife about it that I really got the heebie-jeebies. She asked if maybe what left the tracks had ripped up that door. I took the film and I got it developed, and I decided it was a bear that had accidentally come out of hibernation, ripped up the door, looking for food and maybe even a place to hibernate. A really big bear. I didn't say anything to my boss or anyone else. We'd see what was there when we went back. It was Thursday when I went back home, so we didn't go back until the following Monday. At this point, there were three of us, me, my boss, and another tech. We were going to go up there, replace the door, and get the site online. We tied the heavy metal door onto the side of the cat and squeezed in and headed up the mountain. There hadn't been any snow since the last time I'd been there. I watched for tracks all the way up, and when I got to the last 100 feet, I don't know what I was thinking. They were gone, of course. I'd run over them on my way down. But the tracks going up the bank were still there, just as I'd left them. I stopped the cat, got out, and showed them to the guys. Of course, they weren't as fresh, but they hadn't melted any and were pretty distinct. Nobody knew what to make of them. The other tech, who like me carried a camera, took some photos. It was good, which was meant that I wasn't the only one that was puzzled by it, and now I had photos to go with it. But they weren't nearly as impressive as the other pictures I took when I had been there. The toes were missing from where the animal had slid a bit while climbing. When we got on top, everything was just as I'd left it. Nobody could figure out how it happened. It was just too bizarre. So we set to shoveling and pretty soon the building was cleared. I worked on the equipment while they fixed the door. We were finally done and ready to leave, and we'd work right through lunch. I think nobody wanted to be there any longer than we had to. The place just felt kind of foreboding. We locked the door, loaded up, and headed back down the mountain. I was watching for more tracks, but didn't see any until we got partway down the mountain. And then, I'll be darned if we didn't find more. The same ones, right in the cat tracks. We stopped, and by now we were really tired. But the tech and I got out and took some more photos. Our boss didn't have a word to say. He just sat in the cat. We got back down to the parking area, locked the gate behind us, and drove over to where the pickup and the snowcat trailer were parked. It was twilight, almost dark at this point. It had been a long day. We just weren't prepared for what we saw next. The pickup tailgate had been wrenched from the truck and thrown a good 20 feet. I say thrown because one couldn't see any drag marks, and it wasn't carried as there were no tracks in the snow. To make things worse, the cat trailer had been, at least it appeared to have been, physically picked up and twisted, wrenching it and the hitch into a mass of twisted metal and separating the trailer from the truck. Around everything were more of the huge tracks that we'd seen up the mountain. We just stood there, exhausted, and didn't know what to do or what to say. But I could tell you, we were all scared. I suggested we go to the motel and figure it all out and come back in the morning and decide what to do then. We wasted no time getting into the truck, but Tom didn't want to leave the cat. He was afraid something might happen to it, that whoever or whatever had done this would be back. So he drove it until we ran out of snow on the road, then parked it. At that point, we were a good 5 miles from the gate, so we hoped it would be okay. It was an expensive piece of equipment. Back at the motel, nobody said much. We were quiet. Went to dinner, went to bed. To be honest, I think we were all in shock. The next day, we went back, got the trailer, jerry-rigged it, and managed to get into a welding shop and have everything fixed so that we could travel back in it. And then we went back and got the snowcat and headed home. I don't think any of us ever mentioned it to one another again. But it wasn't long until policy came down from up high that you couldn't travel alone anymore. They cited health reasons and safety reasons. Tom, my boss, never did ask me to go up to that site again. I'm not sure if he ever went back himself or the other tech. I retired a couple of years later. I still have those photos of those tracks in my drawer, and I still don't know what could have made them or what happened that day. Next story. 3 years ago, I worked in a very nice rest home as a CNA. It's in a place in Utah, just off University Avenue, right before Will's Pit Stop. The people I helped there were near the end of their lives, obviously, so we had a lot of people pass on, but not a lot of them hung around there after they died. So unusual occurrences were not the norm for the residents and the staff. The residents got a hold of the CNAs by using a pull cord in their rooms that alerted us by a pager that would buzz and vibrate and show the room number of the person that needed help, or they had a necklace that had a button they could push to summon help. Now, this is important to remember. The pull cords in the apartments had to be pulled with a fairly forceful tug to be activated and could only be reset by going into the room and pushing a little plastic switch attached to its backup. A day prior to when this story occurred, one of our residents suddenly took a nosedive downhill and had to go to the hospital, where she passed away that night. It was all very sudden. Her name was Anna, and she'd been very healthy and active just a few days before. At the end of our shift, the day after she passed away, me and two other CNAs were sitting in the staff room chatting. All the other CNAs had gone for the day, as well as the RN and the LPN that are there during the daytime, so we were the only staff left in the building. Our pages started to buzz, which is nothing out of the norm, until one of my co-workers pulled out her pager to see who needed us and realized the room that was calling was Anna's and that she was dead. Her face completely drained of colors for a few seconds. We all thought this was a bit strange, but sometimes the necklace call buttons malfunction, So we figured that was probably what it was and decided just to go and check her room in case it was family that needed help moving her stuff out of there, something ordinary like that. When we reached the room, the door was locked and the only ones with the keys are the residents themselves and the nursing home and housekeepers. This is important to keep in mind when reading what we found in the room. We unlocked the door and all the lights were off. Then we noticed that the actual port cord had been pulled down, and that is what summoned us to that room, not a malfunctioning necklace call light. After we got over our initial shock, we noticed that there were blankets and couch cushions strewn all across the living room, and that it hadn't been like that when she had left for the hospital the day before. It could have been family, but why would you leave your mother's apartment all torn up? At this point, we were all getting a little freaked out, but someone had to reset the call light, and that night, I was not feeling at all like going into a room, so me and the other CNA ganged up together and pushed the other one, Kristen, to go into the room and forced her to do it. Not nice, I know. She ran in, pushed the switch up, and ran out, almost tripping on a couch cushion in her haste to escape. We were all a little shaken, and when the graveyard shift arrived, we told them what happened. And they, of course, didn't believe us. As far as I know, nothing ever happened in that room. I think it was Anna just saying goodbye to Courtyard and the staff. She was really a fun lady who probably got a kick out of seeing us so scared. Because believe me, we were. Next story. This happened to me when I was 9 years old at a lake in Colorado. I spent a lot of time there with my grandparents in the summer, as both of my parents worked. My grandfather was an outdoorsman, but he didn't like to fish, but we often went to a place called Buckhorn Lakes in the mountains just to hang out and have a picnic. It was this one particular trip. My grandparents took me and my two cousins, boys aged 11 and 12, and two teenage boys who were staying with my aunt and uncle while their parents were gone. I don't remember where my aunt and uncle were, that the boys were all with us, but I think they were probably working. The road up to the lakes was really rough, and it took a while to get there. We rode in the back of a pickup. This was before anyone thought much about that, but it did have high side rails and was safe. I was a bit of a tomboy, and now that they had older reinforcements, my two cousins decided it would be fun to pick on me, which they did often anyway. They were half afraid of me because they knew I'd get even, usually later, when they least expected it. But now, they started in earnest, teasing and trying to get me to stand on the side rails of the pickup, which, of course, they weren't afraid of doing. I thought it was dangerous and stupid. They told me that I was a chicken and flapped their arms, making cackling noises. This kind of thing continued all the way until we got there, and we were sidetracked by the picnic my grandmother had made. After lunch, we decided to go down to the biggest lake and see what we could find. My grandmother was reading a book and my grandfather was taking a nap in his chair, typical for both of them. Nobody worried much about us being out and exploring. We knew how to take care of ourselves. We could swim, and we were pretty wood savvy. That's just how it was back then. We weren't coddled. We had a lot of freedom. So off we went to the lake, which was long and narrow. It was the typical mountain lake in the trees, logs floating near the shore. I don't remember much what we did, just the usual exploring, the kind of things kids normally do. It wasn't long before we decided to float some logs around the edge of the lake, pushing them on with long sticks, and that soon led us to taking off our shoes and getting onto the logs and floating around. It wasn't a real safe thing to do, but we could all swim. It wasn't long before I was getting teased again. The boys could go faster on their logs than I could. I was smaller. And they eventually ditched me, leaving me to float alone on the far side of the lake while they left to go back to camp. I was pretty mad, but I just couldn't keep up with them. At that point, I decided it would be best to get off the log and walk back to the camp. So that's what I did. Now, the trees around the lake were pretty thick, and I remember getting scratched up, probably by wild roses. My shoes were back where we left to get on the logs. I was barefoot, which made it a lot hotter. I was also constantly having to climb over logs and push through tree limbs, and it wasn't long before I got lost. I turned back the way I'd come, thinking I'd catch sight of the lake and continue following the shore, but there was no lake where I thought there should be one. I kept trying to head for the lake, but I'd just get into thicker vegetation and be even more lost. I started yelling, hoping someone would hear me, but all I got was silence in return. After about 30 minutes of this, I was scared and sat down, crying. I'd come to the edge of a deep ravine, and I knew there wasn't a ravine near camp, as we'd hiked around there a bunch of times on other trips. I knew I'd walked some distance away. I had no idea what time it was, but I knew my grandfather usually liked to head back to town around 4 p.m., as he always wanted to get back in time for the evening news. Well, I was now worried that they would leave me up there. It was an irrational fear, I realized later, but when you're a kid and you're scared and alone, you worry about things like that. I also remember my grandmother telling me once, if you get lost, just sit down, and eventually someone will find you. Don't wander around. You'll just get more lost. So I decided to just stay where I was and waited for someone to find me. I started yelling again, then it occurred to me maybe a bear or a cougar would hear me and come and get me. So I just shut up, but I was still more scared. It seemed like I sat there forever. Every little sound in the woods terrified me, even though I'd been in those same woods since I was a baby. We'd been coming to the lake for years, but when you're all alone and lost, that attitude changes pretty quick. So I hunched myself under some logs and big ferns. I realized that there were ants all over, so at that point, I decided to climb to the nearest tree and see if I could make sense of where I was at. Like I said, I was a tomboy, and I was good at climbing, so I went up without any trouble. I remember it was a large aspen tree. It seemed like I was way up there, but I think in retrospect, it was only about 15 feet up, clinging to a large branch and sitting on another, my bare feet dangling down. I sat there thinking, at least, now that if I saw a bear or something coming, or somebody coming to rescue, I would know what to do. It made me feel more in control of the situation, which in reality, I wasn't. I sat there, again, it seemed like forever, thinking, what if nobody ever found me? I'd given up yelling, but kept straining to hear in case I saw someone or heard someone calling my name. It wasn't long before daylight changed. The sun was going down. It was going towards late afternoon. Now I wondered if everyone really hadn't left me and gone home. I started crying again, to myself, quietly. Some sense of survival told me not to advertise that I was by myself in the woods. Plus, I was also getting thirsty. All of a sudden, I heard someone coming through the woods towards me. I wanted to yell out, but something said not to. The footsteps crunched on the leaves, and I knew they were coming straight towards me. I hoped and prayed it was my grandfather, but it sounded too heavy. I could finally make out what was coming, and then for sure I knew it wasn't my grandfather. It was a bear. It was big and dark and hairy all over. I became terrified, pulled up my legs, and hid as best I could behind some branches and leaves. The bear came right under me and stopped. Its head was right under me. I could have reached down with my legs and kicked it. I remember thinking it smelled really bad. It almost stank. I almost threw up. It smelled like rotten eggs, or worse. Strangely, though, I was more scared when I saw it coming than when it was under me. Can't explain it, but I felt it wouldn't hurt me. Did I know I was right above it? I wasn't sure. I just stopped and was standing. It didn't look up at me, and I held my breath and hoped it would leave. After a few minutes, it walked away a few feet to a clearing and sat down on its haunches. I could now really see what it was, and it wasn't any bear, at least any that I'd ever seen. I couldn't figure it out, so I just thought this was some kind of new species of bear. I was only 9 years old. It had the same color as a bear, dark brown, but had large shoulders, like a football player. It had muscles that rippled underneath the skin, but I still couldn't make out its face because it had its back to me. It had a large head, and the head seemed shaped like a football. The fur really didn't look like fur, but more like hair, kind of hung off the arms. It just sat there on its haunches for a bit, then it reached over and picked up two large rocks and started banging them together, making a rhythmic sound, like a drum. It knocked the rocks together so loud I thought they would break. Then it paused and listened. After a few rounds of this, I could hear yelling way in the distance. Now I was getting scared. What if it was calling in its friends and telling them I was there? I started to cry again, though I tried not to. This animal just kept banging the rocks, and something replied in the distance, and it seemed to be getting closer and closer. It was nearby, but I couldn't make out who or what it was, but it was definitely human. I wanted to yell back, but I was too scared. I just clung to my tree, and the creature just kept banging the rocks together. But it wasn't long before the yelling was close enough that I could tell it was my grandfather and my cousins. At that point, the creature stood up, turned around, and looked straight up in the tree at me. It had known I was there the whole time. As it stood there looking, I could easily make out its face. People have asked me what it looked like, and all I can say is it was almost human. It had gray skin all on its face, except hair on the cheeks and chin. Kind of like a man would. It was big, it had brown eyes, had no white to them, nor did I make out any ears, just hair. And its eyes were clear and intelligent. But I was still terrified. Yet, somehow I knew it wouldn't hurt me. After a moment, it walked into the forest in the opposite direction of the yelling. It was gone in a second. Now I began to yell, as I could hear my grandfather really close. He and my cousins were soon helping me from the tree. He asked me how I'd managed to make so much noise, and I told him a big brown animal had done it, and pointed at two big rocks. I don't remember much else except we went back to camp. It was almost dark when we got back to the truck. My grandmother was very relieved to see me. Nobody scolded me, and even the boys were nice to me. They had even picked up my shoes. I rode in the cab all the way home, still in shock, so much I couldn't even talk to answer my grandmother's questions. A few days later, my grandfather asked how I could have possibly made so much noise with the rocks, as that's what had led them to me. He said he noticed that the only rocks that were that big, and I would have had trouble picking them up, let alone bang them together. I'm not sure he really believed me about the big animal, but the rock clacking was a point in my favor. My cousins believed me instantly and told me I'd seen a Bigfoot. After that, they seemed to be kind of in awe of me, and all the teasing stopped. We still have get-togethers once a year where we see each other. However, we never talk about that day again.